The problem with this podcast is not our microphones.
No, it's the problem. It's a picnic. Problem in chair, not computer.
Yeah, man. How are you today?
Good. I'm Macias. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Keith Sarlos.
What's going down?
Yeah, you know, just living it up. Enjoying the sunshine.
The sky is so nice out.
Yeah, it's blue and white here today. It's been gray the last few days, so.
Like a typical Los Angeles day. Makes you want to go down to the Coliseum and go see all the big huge trees and get a hot dog. You know, that's what people think life is like in LA.
Oh yeah. I think people think that life is like, you know, Disneyland is right next to the Griffith Observatory, right next to the Hollywood sign.
It is if there was no one there.
Right next to Venice Beach.
It's only 30 miles, but, you know, 30 miles translates to 4 hours.
Yeah. So we talked about weather, we talked about traffic, we talked about Los Angeles-specific things. I think our work is done here.
We could call it world's shortest episode.
Everybody can relate. Oh, man.
I actually had a theory I talked about with my dad the other day. You want to hear it?
Yeah.
So here's the theory. Number one, if you get 40 miles away from the highway or the road, you know, the ocean, if you will, people get nicer. And the reason why is within 40 miles of the ocean, traffic becomes unbearable. And so the rest of your day is basically you're trying to make up for lost time. So you are in a rush and you don't let people cut in front of you in line and you are out for you.
And now why is the ocean the thing that causes this?
Because I think the ocean draws so many people to it that the consternation of, you know, bodies of water like that with a great view and everything else that kind of comes with it is what makes people go crazy.
You blame the traffic in Los Angeles or San Francisco or New York. You think all of that is caused by being next to the oceans?
Yeah, I kind of do, because like if you think about it this way, if the ocean is the greatest form, number one, it's visually appealing. Everybody wants to be by the ocean. Number two, it also is a dead zone. So what I mean, San Francisco is a great, thriving, awesome city with beautiful views of the bay and bridges and awesome looking things. But there's that huge dead zone, which is just water that people don't live upon.
Right.
And that makes the value of being able to see that higher. I think the same thing happens with Manhattan, right? Surrounded by water, there's geographical boundaries that say this is all you can do within this space. Because
So is this large bodies of waters or the ocean specifically? Like, would you say this also applies to Chicago, like Lakeshore Drive and the Great Lakes?
Sure. And I think all of that it sounds weird to say this, but that whole point of anger, that's a weird way to put it, but that frustration, the thing that bleeds, I'm super pissed off, I got to do something about this, all comes from that. Because if you go to, you know, kind of the middle, not middle of nowhere, but where land, if you look at like a land is $15,000 and $250,000 or $500,000 for just a postage stamp. People are pretty laid back, you know, and they get space from their neighbors and they want to know who their neighbor is. Because the closer you live to your neighbor, the less you want to know about them. I think that's true, because it's like, I know people that, like, even me, it's like I kind of knew my neighbor in Long Beach on both sides, but I didn't want to hang out with them because they were kind of in my little bubble of space.
But, right, they're kind of like ever present.
Yeah, right. Like you can reach out and hand them a bottle of milk, you know, through the window. But when you get space around you, typically you care about your neighbor a little bit more. I don't know. Because
interesting.
LA's always been, to me, it's like even, you know, being born and raised there, it just feels like a party too many people got invited to, you know? And there's a moment like where you throw a party and everybody who's there, like we just had a adult game night at our house the other night, which was super fun, you know, laughing, Pictionary and whatever.
Yeah.
But everybody there was like helping clean up, doing dishes. By the time they left, it was almost cleaner than when they got there. But there's a tipping point of if we invited four more people, does that turn into the people leaving half drank cans of beer and, you know, half cigarette butts just sitting around and it just garbagey, well, and then people leave and they're almost anonymous, right?
Well, I think also that's like, that's when you invite the 18 to 25 year olds versus totally. Your adult
friends. but you know what I mean. It's like, I don't drive down the road and, you know, litter because I think I know the person behind me. I mean, maybe that's not really the reason I do it, but I have pride in where I live, but I also don't want to be a jerk. If you're going down the freeway, you could throw a bag of trash out your window on the 105 and no one's going to say a word to you.
Right.
And
well, that all comes back to, like, you know, whether you're a good person on your own or are you doing it because you'll get caught? Are you, you know what I mean? Are you doing the right thing for what are the reasons for which you do the right thing?
I totally agree.
But I hear you. But there's also the other part. It's like, no one will ever know.
Totally. And I think that's the part of it that, like, I can use my grandfather as an example. He's like, you know, if you want to go out there and be a jerk, then be Keith, you know, and move away because your last name belongs to me. Mm. I had it first, all, you know, that kind of a thing. And it's like, oh, okay. So I made sure I didn't want to screw up because I didn't want to let somebody else down. But if I was anonymous, then it's like, I guess you can kind of go out for yourself.
Hmm. It's a big week, Keith.
Yeah, big week.
I was just thinking about something separately.
Go for it.
We can get to the drones, but your kids are back in school too, right?
My kids are back in school. Brielle is actually at, you know, her fancy school. So they're up at Big Sur sleeping on the beach. No cell phones, no nothing. It's like team bonding. My daughter basically goes to school at a startup, you know?
Okay.
It kind of feels like that.
Is that how they start the school year?
Yeah.
Or so is that?
Well, I knew I was in trouble with my daughter's school when the guy who was speaking kind of had like a South African accent. I'm like, this is not going to go well. This is not good for the pocketbook.
Why? What did that mean to you?
Hey, that's fancy, man. Are you kidding?
That's next level fancy. Like totally. British is regular fancy, but like, yeah, when you bring in.
I said to Brielle, I'm like, what is this? Hogwarts, you know? And she kind of laughs. And Brielle's, you know, she's got her wits about her. There's some pretty quote unquote fancy kids that go to her school. And she came home. She goes, Dad, I know what my school's about now. And I go, what? She goes, a kid was really distraught in my class because he broke his favorite croquet mallet. And I go, what are you talking about? I'm like, we need to get you out of there now. You know, she's like, no, it's cool. I can handle this. But yeah, they go to Big Sur and it's kind of like they kind of mix up all the kids so they get to know new people. And it's really just like a, you know, web 2.0 bonding experience for all of them. And then Cash, you know, just eating donuts, going to regular school.
Right.
Living, you know, couldn't wait to go back to school. He's been wearing a collared shirt. I don't know what he's got going on.
Not because he has to, but because he wants
to. Totally. He's like, this is my look this year. I'm like, what? Collared shirts? And he's like, yeah. I'm like, dude, you look like a dad from Colorado, man. What are you working with?
I like it.
Yeah. Everybody else wants to wear Yeezys and Cash is like, I want to wear flip-flops, shorts, and a collared shirt. So how about your kids? Your kids back in school?
They started kindergarten, so they're just start. I mean, it's the real deal now, I guess. I was totally until last week. I was like, oh, they've been going to preschool for 3 years. It's, you know, no big deal. And then as it crept up, I'm like, oh no, it's like a thing. This is going to be something different. So yeah, we had we're in day three.
And how did they handle that? Because there's two of them. You know, they get to go to school, like even Brielle, eighth grade, right?
Yeah.
One of the things that was super interesting about just even that conversation, because like I remember eighth grade now, right? That's that's a weird thing when your children are starting to experience and have the same experience as you did, and you clearly remember how that felt. And so with Brielle, I said, you know, Heather actually was really, really brilliant about it. And she's like, listen, people are going to have preconceived notions. Summer happened. But if you show up and you're like, what's up, man? I had a great summer. How are you? And high five and kind of come in like super strong, like a bull. Mm-hmm. Everybody else would be like, oh my gosh, Brielle is dripping with confidence, you know, and, you know, huddle around her kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. And I saw that happen just like when she walked in, but she was, you know, she was worried and nervous about school starting.
This is the same kids that she's been with before though.
Yeah. But you know, it's, so I got to say goodbye for the summer kind of a vibe. And when they get back together, they have to reestablish pecking orders and who got a haircut and who got taller and who didn't. All, you know, it's like, that's what the first week, I guess, usually is about. Like, I was always excited because, that, like, girls changed.
Well, that's what I was going to say. At that age, too, right?
Totally.
You're coming back from summer. Kids are changing in leaps and bounds emotionally, physically, socially, everything else. So, yeah, I guess that is one of those things where you kind of have to re-break in those relationships and...
What kid's going to try a new name this year? It's like, Stefan. You're like, okay, Steven.
Nice to see you, Steven. No. Stefan.
Stefan now. Got a haircut, the whole thing. Your kids, I mean, I think it's got to be awesome. It's either got to be, you know, I know a few sets of twins, but when they kind of walk on the scene, they at least have their wingman, you know, the person who's always been there.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's also one of those things because they've always had that. It doesn't feel like it's anything extra to them.
Totally, I get that.
You know, and they're very much like they don't do the same things. Within 2 minutes, they'll be separated. Like they do have each other there, awesome. So they're not alone, but they're not together. Like Emma, even when we went like for a picnic, like. Couple days before school started, Emma found some other little girl and was running in one direction, and Ava went and found like some sort of fake dump truck sandbox toy and was playing with that, you know, and they did their own thing for like 25 minutes before they looked up and said, oh, where's my sister?
That's awesome.
So it's interesting, but you know, they're in a Spanish immersion kindergarten.
Really?
Yeah, so I've
Tell
been
a little bit concerned.
It's 90% Spanish, and it actually goes down over time between now and fifth grade.
And why did you choose that?
Because I think it's...
Did you grow up in a Spanish-speaking household?
I grew up speaking Spanish, but stopped when I went to school.
So that was your first language?
It was one of them. I grew up bilingual.
Unreal.
You know, well, my father is a professor of bilingual education.
Well, and okay.
We've
got to the bottom of this rather quickly.
Right. So that, you know, and both of my brothers can speak. They don't, the eldest one is pretty much fluent both ways. The middle one can speak, but doesn't so often. And I lost most of my vocabulary when I started going to school. And so there's those reasons. It's also one of those things that I know that there's benefits to it. I know that I wish I could speak it more fluently myself, because even though I can get by, I would be a lot more comfortable in those situations when I'm using it if I could actually, you know, if I was a full Spanish speaker. And I think it's a benefit. You know, I think that learning any other language in addition to English is a benefit, but I think that living here in Los Angeles, and with having a family that speaks Spanish and having Mexican ancestry, I think it makes the most sense for them to be able to have that language. You know, possibly, you know, if I was looking at it as a business context, maybe it'd be like Chinese, but also like English has become the language of business. You know, it's a weird thing, but I think that it's just going to give them a leg up in thinking and speaking and using their brain in a way different than if they were monolingual. I don't know if it'll fit, but we'll see, you know. there's been some pushback because their preschool also was the same way, but wasn't as rigorous or robust. So we'll see how it goes. But yeah, they're in day three. They were running to school yesterday and today, but the logistics are different. We got to get up earlier. We got to get there earlier. We got to park. I got to walk them into class each day. So we're figuring out the go to sleep and wake up schedule and the changes that we need to make so that we can have a happy house of getting ready and getting to school and not being tardy and late and all that.
So now that we're kind of, number one, I think that Spanish immersion is amazing. That's awesome. That just like full stop. That I think that's a brilliant move on your part. Number two, when you're just talking about how you get your kids to school, right? This last year, I was visiting friends in New York, and we walked their daughter to school. And when we walked their daughter to school, it was like four blocks. You know, you're walking New York pace, and then she goes mm-hmm. to school in a, you know, basically six-story building that has mm-hmm. like a basketball court on the roof. Evidently, this is one of those schools that before you get pregnant, you put your name on the list. New York, yep. You know, outside yep. Chelsea. Or maybe it is in Chelsea. I don't know. And I was just thinking like, whoa, okay, that was a foreign transition. Like, how do I get to school? Right. Mm-hmm. I'm humping five blocks as a little kid, snow, sleet, rain, New York weather, into a room where there's a security, like two security people outside the front. And then you're hiking up six floors. Like little teeny kids, right? Yeah. And going to school
with a backpack or something, right?
Exactly. And I was like, wow, what a weird way to go to school. But I guess, yeah, this totally makes sense, right? It had that feeling of like the only thing I could say is like when I was a kid and you'd go snow skiing and you go to Mammoth, there was like Warming Hut 2, now it's Canyon Lodge or whatever, where you're basically walking up, you know, eight flights of stairs and heavy coats, you know, in outdoor wear. Which is what you're kind of doing here, right? My kids never went to school in LA, right? So my experience as a parent with kids in school is I can almost see their schools from my casement. And Cash walks home. Like Cash got – like the whole school went on lockdown when he was in kindergarten because he walked home from school after kindergarten. And the whole school didn't know where he was and the whole thing went on lockdown and – my wife's like, do you know where Cash is? I'm like, yeah, I'm looking at him. He's sitting right here. She's like, he can't walk home. You know, he's not allowed to do that. And I told Cash, you better start crying when mom gets here, you know, just to smooth it over. But for you, I mean, I know that you used to take, was it the train or the bus to school?
Well, that was until high school.
But
the bus to school. Yeah.
So you're riding the bus for 45 minutes?
Longer than that, you know, you're LA back to LA traffic.
Right.
I think I was at the bus stop for 6 something to be to school for 8:15.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, it was a solid 90 minutes of, you know, a couple of buses, make your way through traffic so you could be there in time.
And with your kids now, is it like a straight, it's going to take us 45 minutes to get these 3 miles?
We leave at 8 a.m. so I can walk them into class at 8:45. Well, that's the goal. That's
right,
the hope.
Right.
But that's mostly because we have to park and then walk. And it's in a residential neighborhood. It's a public school in a residential neighborhood. And like the people who live there haven't left home necessarily all yet. So then you have this, you know, descent of all these parents trying to drop off their children and then parking in the neighborhood. So we're still figuring it out, but you know, you have to park within this kind of like 6 block radius and then do a mini version of what you just described, where we then hoof it from 3 or 4 blocks away with backpacks to the school to be there for the bell and then get them in the class. And then I walk back, you know? Yeah. So it's a whole thing. It's literally, there's the emotional part, but there's just like the family logistics.
Yeah, it's more than 2 hours of your day. It's more than, you know, if you're going to drive somewhere, it's 45 minutes. It's also 45 minutes back and then a 45 minutes there to pick up and 45 minutes back. So you're almost talking about 4 hours a day.
Maybe. We have grandmas mostly picking them up.
Right. But I'm just saying.
I pick them up. But yeah, no, it's a significant amount of time dedicated to that. Or the alternative, you know, I think there's no way we would get around dropping them off, but it's one of the things we're looking at. We're not quite in the position to afford it, but, you know, a lot of people will have a nanny.
Yeah.
You know, but then it's like, if you're going to get a nanny, you need to be able to give that person like a full-time job. You can't just be like, yeah, I just need you for 2 hours a day, Monday through Friday.
It's
like
Uber.
Well, that's the thing. You have to then create an entire world that makes sense to then employ a third parent, basically a vice parent, if you want to call it that, you know, to take care of your, to help you take care of your children. So it's been an interesting thing, but yeah, we have grandmas,
okay,
still helping out in the afternoon so we can finish our work days.
Sure.
It definitely is. But with the new school, I'm on the hook to pick them up 2 days a week. So
okay.
Today I'll pick them up and I'll take them to swim class where my mom will take over, and then I'll get another, hopefully 3 to 4 hours worth of work done after that before, you know, resuming my main responsibility of being their father.
so let me hook in on this. So those 45 minutes, mm-hmm, right? Like,
mm-hmm,
when Brielle was younger and going to the same school as Cash is, we would leave the house a good half hour, 45 minutes before school starts. And, mm-hmm, we'd have coffee and we'd sit down. And, you know, more often than not, than my dad was there or a bunch of other people that we have coffee with were there. And, mm-hmm, we'd just sit and talk and relax and kind of like mentally, we would almost have like a first period before school starts. So she didn't show up to school with like wet hair and like, oh my gosh, I'm late and flustered. She showed up like relaxed. And we kept doing that with Cash. And then it was just us, like all three of us going in. And now, you know, we're doing drop-offs and then going grabbing coffee. Me and Cash get to hang out. Dude, those, I found that 45 minutes was, and you get it. So here's a little dad advice. To enjoy and relish that time that you get with them in the car. You know, you're going to find out more in that 45 minutes than you will all summer long. Because if you're like, hey, so what's going on? How are you doing? What's going on? You know, other kids or blah, blah, blah. But establishing like that conversational aspect about, you know, who they are and being not, you know, being friends, mm-hmm, and that thing will be, you'll look back at it so favorably, and it'll lay a groundwork of like, oh, we have time in the saddle together, you know?
Yeah.
We can hang with this stuff. So
yeah,
that's, and let me dovetail into the other piece of it where you're talking about, you know, let's say 4 hours plus expense of getting your kids to school and all of that. I find it so amazing how radically being a parent has changed from when I grew up to now. And what I mean by that is it's like, okay, there's the bus, get on it, see you later. And it didn't, my parents were not investing a 4 hour daily commute into my education.
Uh-huh.
And that shows, I mean, I think a lot of parents are doing that now. And it shows the commitment to, you know, not only education, but hopefully your kids go, wow, I have to say it to my kids once they're older, you know, it's like, no, this is the time we are spending on your education. This is what we expect out of your education for you.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, they're not quite there yet.
No, but kindergarten, it's not where you lay the heavy bricks. You know what I mean?
No, but I have to hit them with what my dad told me. He's like, learn everything, but don't believe any of it. You know,
that's so gangster.
That's the deal. It's like, yeah, we'll let you know what's up in here.
Yeah.
In the house, we'll let you know what's up. But
totally,
you know, go learn all of it. They're going to tell you some Christopher Columbus stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean that's what it is.
What?
You know, they're gonna tell you some stuff.
Dude, Brielle's class had the Christopher Columbus thing where half the class had to defend him and the other half class had to put, he was on trial, and mm-hmm. they, as a class, had to. It was like a 1 week thing where it was like a full mock jury, everything, and
yeah.
you had to
and
say
that's good,
why
right?
he was be... a horrible person for you know what the crimes he committed, kind of a thing.
And I'm not saying that all things that we hold should be vilified or anything like that. But it is one of those things you have to let your children know as you kind of share in their education and everything else that like you're going to hear some stuff that is not necessarily what we hold as important in this family. Like you said, mm-hmm. like you said about you can go somewhere and be Keith, but the last name is mine and you have to live up to it. There's other things that are related to that as well. It's like, you, just because you're living up to the letter of the law of something that's being taught to you externally doesn't mean that's the whole story. And I think that's the main thing of it.
Are we all trying to raise woke kids? It's so hard, man.
Just aware, at the very least. You know, I think there's some parts of it that are newfangled and can be wokeness, and some of it is just that, you know, I don't know. When they come to tell me, and they tell me that Pluto is not a planet, we might have to.
That's my opinion. Dude, speaking of the same thing, Cash rolls home with homework, and I look at it, and I'm like, okay, 84 plus, you know, 32 is this, and he's like, that's not how you figure that out. I'm like,
I've heard of this new math. I'm not engaging in new math yet.
Wait, just wait, because all of a sudden you're like. It's really, really, really hard to say, dude, that's dumb, you know, and I'm not good at that. So it's like this is how you figure it out. I'm like, dude, that's dumb. You got to do it like this. And he's like, dad, you're ruining what they're teaching me. I'm like, oh, sorry,
man. Yeah. Maybe they'll be safe from me because they're, you know, the thing about this school is that they're learning their Spanish, they're learning their science, their history, their math, they're learning all of that in Spanish. So
really?
Maybe it will be just far enough outside my grasp. Yeah, that's the whole point of it being immersion. It's not just that they're learning the language, they're learning all of their subjects in the language. Dude, so
I always thought that was so hard, man. I mean, seriously, it's like not only are you learning that, you have to be cognizant and aware of not only what you're learning, but the fact of the matter is you're learning it underwater. Yeah, totally. Because as someone who does have, you know, learning disabilities, and one of my major learning disabilities is like, I can figure out, I'm awesome at facts and blah, blah, blah. But as soon as you do have like compounding principles that sit on top of each other, my brain starts locking up real hard, like real hard. Right. And it's like always super scary. And your kids are doing it at a young, like beautiful age. I mean, that's pretty amazing. Well done, man. Okay. What else are we talking about now that we got the kids over with?
Drones.
All right. What do you want to talk about?
So you got a new drone.
Mm-hmm. I was blessed with the new DJI Mavic Pro 2. And here we'll give you the little breakdown. So DJI is kind of the gold standard in, I think, drones right now are definitely prosumer drones. So they came out, they have the very small one, the Spark, which I use all the time. Really love it. It fits like in a, you know, it's smaller. It's way smaller than a shoebox, and you can basically pop that thing out and it fits in a backpack. It's like the size of a water bottle. So then the Mavic had a larger footprint with big, it was basically like a flying X, right? And what they did with this one is they incorporated the folding technology so it would get really small. So this is still definitely much bigger than the Spark, which I would say the Spark is probably the size of an unfolded billfold, if that makes any sense. The Mavic is about 11 inches long. Like if you folded a piece of paper in half the long way, that's kind of the profile of it.
Mm-hmm.
Is this way too dirty? This is too deep, huh? Sorry.
No. I'm being impressed with your size.
I don't know. I mean, I'm trying to.
We have an unfolded billfold. Yeah. And then we have the footprint, which is an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper.
About the size of a size 12 sheet. There you go.
But is it the size of a 12-inch sandwich from Subway?
Roughly the same size. I will go compare today. And I will have updates.
As will I.
I'll have an update for you at a later date.
I mean, I could find a better sandwich to compare it to, but you know, for the people
Jersey
at home,
Mike's. Jersey Mike's.
Well, okay, you know, we have to pick something that they too can go out say, in their
region. And if it's Philly, a hoagie, it's about the size of a hoagie with some water.
But I feel like all those things will vary in size based on where you go. But if it's roughly
the size of a Starless and Sons wine bottle, I guess.
Okay, there we go. We've hit it on the head. Everybody has.
We've got the Greenwich mean of sizing, which is Starless. So there's two different ones that came out. One is called the Zoom, and the other one is the, I just believe it's Pro. And the difference is this. The Pro has a Hasselblad 1-inch sensor on it. And I wanted to hear from you. And the other one has the ability to do Zoom focus. So very similar to like your iPhone. Super high quality, both of them. But the Hasselblad is definitely the more crisp. It's taking in a lot. So I was going to ask you, so like a Canon 5D or a more entry-level Canon, not the Rebel or whatever they changed it to, what size image or – so we said 1-inch what's the right word for that?
Sensor.
Thank you. What size those have? What size sensors do those have?
So, like a 5D is what's called a full frame sensor, and so that means that the sensor is it's most closely related to like a regular 35mm regular. I say that historical 35mm film plate.
Got it. Okay.
So that, and then what they came out with after that was APS-C, I think, which is what most of the other Canon lenses, cameras are based on, like when you start talking about your Rebels and your 60Ds and your 70Ds and your T2Is and all of that stuff. Those things are a smaller sensor, which is why there was a period in time where you could take your 50mm lens from your 5D, which was 50mm, but when you put it on your Rebel, it would then be more like an 85mm lens because there was this 1 to 1.6 ratio. So all of this is math that is related to the size of the sensor and the size of the lens. Okay. And when your sensor gets smaller, your lens gets more zoomed in, for lack of a better term. So you kind of, you lose your wide angle aspect. There's nothing wrong with that. It just, you know, a lot of times when we're doing things that are cinematic, we want these wide sweeping vistas. And that's one of the ways that a lot of this aerial photography and drone photography and drone videography is kind of developed. So when you're talking about it, you know, it's just an interesting thing. The other big sensor format is Micro Four Thirds, which I don't really shoot very much of. But all that's to say, like, if you know the name Hasselblad, they're known for medium format cameras. They're a historical brand. They also are known for very sharp glass and like just they're a historical, very strong camera maker. And what's interesting is that DJI bought them actually almost a year and a half ago, I think. And that was a big deal because it was like this historical brand that was purchased by, you know, this startup, upstart company. They are, let's see, Hasselblad was originally founded in 1841.
So, this you're is talking kind of about. Like, well, what's the other company that makes.
This is like if Applebot Leica.
That's who I was thinking like that, about, right?
You know, and Hasselblad isn't Leica, but Hasselblad is still a big deal. So this introduction of these two cameras is interesting, or these two drones, because they basically said, this is our new hot shit. One of them comes with a Hasselblad camera, which is a digital camera, but it's medium format for a drone. It's definitely a big sensor for a drone. And it's supposed to have like a clarity and a sensitivity that is what they're saying is like world class and the best thing they could present right now. And then they did this other thing where they said, we also had another idea, or at least we've split the baby in half. We have this other one that has a zoom lens, and it has a different complete camera where it can actually zoom in, like your standard telephoto lens that, you know, you or your parents had when you were growing up, where they could actually, you know, take a picture of you playing football across the field while not moving where they were in their seat. And so it's really an interesting idea, because me as a, you know, someone who flies and shoots, I want both of those things. But instead of putting them into one camera, they're like, there's two different ones. So it's been interesting to watch. And, you know, from my friends who have already jumped in, my buddy Leonard has one with the Hasselblad, good. And you have one that has the zoom lens. So I haven't played with either yet. I think I'm going to hold off for a little bit, because I'm still enjoying my Mavic Air. But it's a great time to start flying, and for people who are creating content, these things are awesome.
My dad and I were just actually talking about that too, because I got the zoom, and I got the zoom for a few reasons. One, I wanted the dolly shot, because as someone who loves movies, and I was always like, how do you do that? Like, mentally, I didn't wrap my brain around you're zooming in and rolling backwards at the same time. I mean, it's your standard horror surprise shot where people are like, oh, you know, and they're like, you know, it creates tension.
It's weird. It's a weird thing. And what Keith is describing is the idea of the background is kind of spreading out and getting farther away while the person stays still. So it's this weird thing where you see whatever the subject is stay in place while you're zooming in or out everything that's behind them and in front of them. It's a trippy thing, and your mind doesn't understand how it can work, because it's not the way our eyes work.
Right.
You know, when we move forward or move back. But this is my question for you. That definitely is the selling point.
For me.
But like, how often can you use that before it becomes like
cliche?
Yeah, you have to like bake in, like if you made a video, how many times could you bake that
once
in before it breaks the illusion?
Yeah, for
one
sure.
time.
But
and that's why I think I'm getting the Hasselblad.
So this is why I got that one and not the Hasselblad. So I have the Spark. I can go up, I can fly whenever, I can shoot 4K, super rad. I got it. And the zoom, you know, especially with like flying around our vineyards, which is what I take 90% of my shots of, I wanted to have another lens, if you will, instead of having to shoot prime all the time or shoot.
So this then it makes sense, because it's like in combination with your other one, you now have, it's almost like your camera bag where you have different lenses. It's going to be your camera bag where you have different drones, because the lenses are attached to the whole flying
platform. And the part I liked about it was, like, I like creating content. I just think it's fun. I look forward to it, right? And the thing I really like, even more than the zoom, is I like the hyperlapse. And the hyperlapse is super amazing on this. It's super stable. There's a bunch of different ways you can do it, which is you can just set it on its course, and then it's just racking shots. And then there's free flow, where you can just fly around and it's taking your shots, like for hyperlapse. Number three is you can put in three different waypoints, and the camera will turn and move and do it just perfectly for you. Like I set up a rail around my vineyard, and it's just kind of riding the track. So like this morning, you know, I've got this thing day one.
Can you save those tracks? Like if you wanted to, could you fly the same route tomorrow?
No, but there are apps that will allow you to do that. So we do that a lot in the vineyard.
Cause that becomes interesting as a,
like the seasons a, change, you
know, like a time lapse. Yep. The exact same thing. Like even with the same camera moves. So
the thing I just want is, you know, I think the neat part is, how many years ago? Let's think. A couple of years ago, you would have to build a $5,000 machine to do this. A year before that, you had to charter a helicopter to do this. And now you could actually go out and shoot these Christopher Nolan-like shots for under $1,500. And
Well, even less than that, right? Because that's if you had to buy it brand new.
Totally.
If you already have it,
no, you're getting
price per shot. Yeah, it's interesting. I watch anytime I'm watching a movie from the 80s, which is a thing that I do that I enjoy, and you'll see like this shot of like New York City from the sky, and you know, you go by the Hudson River, you go over the Brooklyn Bridge.
Shot.
It was so expensive, and it doesn't look good. It's not stabilized. I mean, it looks good within the context.
Gritty time drama,
but it doesn't look good in the sense that it's like not stabilized. It's not stable. It's rough. it was so expensive, and like I have a thing that I don't use that often. That's just sitting on the chair next to me that could get that same shot. You know, and so that's interesting. Like, what does it mean to create when you have access to these other tools? And I was listening to another podcast yesterday, and they were talking about Industrial Light and Magic, and there's people who still work there who worked on the first Star Wars, and like they can do anything now, but they're still applying the same storytelling craft and all that other stuff. It's like the development of what. You know, what you do as well as what can you do, like hand in hand. So it's fun and it's interesting. And I don't know. I'm excited to play with these things, but I'm also like, I'm holding on to the one that I already have because I haven't fully worked it out yet. So I don't think I'm going to buy one of the new ones until I have a real reason.
I think I need to figure
out the content, but I'm going to fly yours and I'm going to fly Leonard's and I'm going to fly everyone else's and I'm going to play with it. And maybe that'll change my mind, but I'm trying to hold off just from the standpoint of like, you could surround yourself with the new thing very easily and end up like Casey Neistat with a wall full of drones behind you, even though you can only fly one at a time. I like it. Well, then let's hang them on the wall. We got to get. Then you'll have 10 million YouTube followers.
I'm good without that.
I'm jealous of your it's the way your setup is good. Like you have the new toy and you don't have to look for somewhere to fly it. It's like you have the perpetually interesting to look at and always growing and living in private.
For me, you know, being a kid who grew up in Southern California, you know, not only do I not take it for granted, it's always just a fresh eyes. You know, I get to see this thing in a different way. And part, you know, what I view in my, you know, we make wine, but also we're sharing the story of who we are, right? And our place and why our wines taste the way they do. And the only thing I'm trying to do, everybody else writes these stupid bullshit tasting notes. And I'm like, here, take a look at this and just show them where it comes from. And I think that's so much more visually, not only visually appealing, but I think you get it. You know, people get it way faster when you can say, look, this tastes like this because it's grown right there. And you can taste this one and it tastes different from that one because look how different the place it's grown. But mostly it's just like, I just like putting stuff up in the air and flying.
I like it. Exactly. It's fun. Right on. Well, I'm going to come up and fly with you soon. I saw you not that long ago, but we didn't get the drones up in the air. So that was a missed opportunity.
Next time.
Next time, Gadget. Right on. Well, the day is getting on. I'm going to jump into it.
Later, man.
I'll talk to you soon. Later.